You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokens and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, June 11th, 2021, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I hope you're doing okay today.
Are you stoned now?
Yeah, yes, Senator Sanders, I am stoned. Well, I'm not really stoned, but yeah, did you catch that quote? Bernie Sanders, the Politico reporter, a reporter from Politico, caught up with Senator Bernie Sanders and told him that she was the cannabis reporter, and Bernie Sanders asked,
"Are you stoned now?
Are you stoned now?" So now we have a sound clip that we'll be using for many years, I'm sure. We got a great show for coming up for you today. Lots happening in the world of cannabis. We'll start, of course, with the Cannabis Headline Newsweek. We'll get you caught up with all the stories from all the states and nationwide, what's happening in marijuana reform. Then in today's Cannabis Focus, we're taking a look here in the Intermountain West. The state of Idaho is being copied. Our friends in Wyoming, the Libertarian Party out there in Wyoming, are coming up with a couple of initiatives that sound really familiar to those of us here in Idaho, so we'll talk a little bit about that. Also on the program today, we've got an anti-drug public service announcement from the Church of Scientology, and we'll talk a little bit about the Pacific Northwest some more. Washington State recently announced a Jabs for Joints program, where you could get a free joint if you got vaccinated for COVID-19, and it's not turning out very well, and we'll explain why, what the problem is going on there. And then in the Radical Rant today, I've got to respond to the Citizens Against Legalizing Marijuana, the group Calm, who I like to troll on Twitter. They recently published a story coming out of Portland, Oregon, talking about a illegal marijuana deal gone bad. And they were taunting us, saying, "Oh, you said legalization would end the violence." And so I got to respond to that, because you can't blame legalization when prohibition still exists. We'll cover that. And then in hour two, Toker Talk Radio, plenty to talk about on the politics front, including what's not exactly breaking news, but Representative Louis Gohmert of Texas is an idiot. Oh, like a full-scale, 100% grade A, top-of-the-heap moron. And we'll play a clip from Louis Gohmert in hour two that you won't believe it. You won't even believe that an adult human being could have said such a thing. He's not alone. We got another one, Mo Brooks, we'll talk about as well. And these idiot Republicans give us a look at why we can no longer afford to have weak Democrats. This week has been a litany of issues that the Democrats should be playing hardball on, that now they're rolling over and showing their belly. And I got to talk about that a little bit. Also, in the second segment of our Toker Talk Radio, I'll tell you about Zoot Suit Riots, which you might have thought that was just a Cherry Pop and Daddy song, but no, it was a thing. I'll tell you what it was. And then David Simon, the creator of The Wire, the documentary series about drug dealing in Baltimore and policing in Baltimore, absolutely excoriated Jack Pobiasek, this right-winger, when it comes to how the violent crime has surged in the city of Baltimore. I got to run this down for you, because it's the best description of the drug war ever. Plus, we'll look at Colorado's new regulatory bill and the new legalized consumption lounges in the state of Nevada. Like I said, lots going on, so let's get you caught up, starting right now with the Cannabis Headline Newsweek.
This is your Cannabis Headline News, brought to you every weekday by Radical Russ Radio at RadicalRuss.com, your 24-hour source for marijuana music and cannabis conversations. Subscribe today for just $4.20 at Patreon.com/RadicalRuss. With your Cannabis Headline News for the week ending Friday, June 11th, 2021, I'm Russ Belville. The governor of Nevada has signed a bill to legalize marijuana consumption lounges in the state. The legislation cleared the assembly last month and was then approved by the Senate last week before being signed by Governor Steve Sisolak on Friday.
Sponsored by Assemblyman Steve Yeager, the bill would create two new licensing categories for cannabis businesses in the state. One would be for retail cannabis consumption lounges, and the other would be an independent cannabis consumption lounge. Existing retailers could apply for the former license and sell products that could be consumed on site by adults 21 and older. Independent lounges could enter into a contract with an existing retailer to purchase and prepare ready-to-consume marijuana products for resale. The governor of Connecticut on Monday signed legislation that includes language requiring the state to carry out a study into the therapeutic potential of psilocybin mushrooms. Governor Ned Lamont, who may also see a marijuana legalization bill delivered to his desk if the legislature succeeds in approving it this week, signed off on the psychedelics policy proposal as part of a broader package of health reform initiatives. Lamont called the marijuana bill, which has until close of session Wednesday to reach his desk, quote, a national model for regulating the adult use cannabis marketplace, end quote. That model includes possession of up to 1.5 ounces, home cultivation of cannabis plants, expungement of criminal records, protection from search based on marijuana smell and from discrimination over marijuana metabolite testing, and THC caps of 30% for flower and 60% for all other products but vape cartridges, and license favoritism for social equity applicants. A bill to decriminalize marijuana possession in Louisiana is heading to the governor's desk. The Senate gave final approval to the decriminalization proposal, sponsored by Representative Cedric Glover, in a 20-17 vote on Monday. It would make it so possession of up to 14 grams of cannabis would be punishable by a $100 fine without the threat of jail time. The House approved the measure by a vote of 67-25 last month. Last week, lawmakers also sent Governor John Bel Edwards a separate bill to let patients in the state's medical cannabis program legally smoke whole plant marijuana flower. The incremental cannabis victories come weeks after an effort to legalize recreational marijuana more broadly in the state stalled in the House of Representatives. With just hours left to go in Connecticut's regular legislative session, House lawmakers on Wednesday decided to delay a planned vote on legalizing marijuana in the state. The proposal, which narrowly passed the Senate on Tuesday, will be taken up again during a special session by the end of the month. Democratic leaders have insisted they have the votes to push through the nearly 300-page cannabis bill introduced over the weekend, but Republicans have broadly opposed it. Many expected a drawn-out debate Wednesday night, with GOP representatives trying to run out the clock to prevent a vote. Groups in favor of cannabis legalization downplayed the delay. Devon Ward, senior legislative counsel for Marijuana Policy Project, told Marijuana Moment that the group is, quote, encouraged that legislative leadership is committed to getting the bill done, end quote. The issue of marijuana legalization won't be taken up by Rhode Island lawmakers until this summer or fall, a top lawmaker said this week. The latest piece of cannabis reform legislation was filed just 2 weeks ago. Upon its introduction, sources familiar with the situation told Marijuana Moment that because time is running out before lawmakers typically break for the summer after completing the budget, they expect the legislature to reconvene in September to tackle the issue. Now, House Speaker Joseph Shekarchy is confirming that's a possibility. Quote, marijuana legalization will not be decided until after the budget is adopted this month, Shekarchy told WPRI-TV on Wednesday. Quote, it is possible we will return sometime in the summer or fall, end quote. A vote on a Delaware marijuana legalization bill that was scheduled in the House of Representatives for Thursday has been canceled, despite attempts by the sponsor to propose amendments to reach the 3/5 supermajority support threshold needed to pass it. Representative Edward Osiensky, who filed the measure, said lawmakers need more time to consider a series of proposed changes before reaching a consensus and moving forward. Olivia Nagel, a legislative analyst with the Marijuana Policy Project, said advocates are, quote, hopeful that lawmakers will be able to come to an agreement on the details and bring HB 150 to a floor vote as soon as possible, end quote. The legislation could be rescheduled for consideration as soon as next week. In an apparent effort to build buy-in among legislators, Osiensky introduced several amendments on Tuesday, including some that would gut key social equity provisions. One proposed revision would eliminate language to establish a fund to provide financial assistance to equity businesses. Colorado lawmakers gave final approval Tuesday to House Bill 21-1317, the most sweeping regulatory bill for the cannabis industry since legalization. It faced almost no resistance in either chamber, passing 56-8 in the House and 35-0 in the Senate. The bill now moves to Governor Jared Polis, a longtime advocate for legalized marijuana and an ally of the industry. His office declined to say whether he will sign the bill into law. This bill would direct the Colorado School of Public Health to analyze existing research, quote, related to the physical and mental health effects of high-potency THC marijuana and concentrates, end quote. The bill also restricts daily purchase limits for concentrates like wax and shatter to 8 grams per person, a fifth of the current limit, and creates a real-time database to enforce long-standing state laws on daily purchase limits. There are also several new rules designed to ensure medical marijuana patients have a more substantial relationship with doctors so that it is not as easy for people ages 18 to 20 to obtain cards. A bill to legalize marijuana for medicinal use is picking up support across North Carolina. In April, Senate Bill 711, the North Carolina Compassionate Care Act, was filed. The bill would allow for the use of medicinal marijuana in the state, as well as limited growing of the plant for medicinal use. It is hardly the first bill to attempt to make marijuana legal in some form or another, but SB 711 does have something previous bills do not: actual support. The bill was introduced by one of the legislature's most powerful Republicans, Senator Bill Rabin, and has support from other prominent members of the party. If passed and signed into law, the bill would make medical marijuana available to patients suffering from a variety of ailments, including cancer, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, ALS, Crohn's disease, and Parkinson's disease, all of which could see greater relief through cannabis than other pharmaceuticals. Wyoming voters may get the chance to vote on two separate marijuana ballot initiatives next year. While the text of either 2022 measure has not yet been released, a news advisory from the Libertarian Party, which plans to formally file the proposals on Friday, describes the goal as being to, quote, legalize medical cannabis and decriminalize cannabis for personal use, end quote. Apollo Pazell, a strategist working on the cannabis campaign for the party, told Marijuana Moment that the medically focused measure contains a regulatory structure for production and sales, while the separate decriminalization initiative would make it simply so that people would face small fines and not jail time for possessing, using, or cultivating marijuana. A bill to legalize and regulate cannabis for adult use in the state advanced out of a House committee in March, but it did not move further in the legislature by the end of the session. Now, State Representative Marshall Burt is teaming up with the chair of the Libertarian National Committee and other leaders to put reform directly into the hands of voters. Marijuana legalization is set to go into effect in Virginia at the beginning of next month, and now the state is taking a step to educate residents about the rules of the new program. The state on Thursday launched a webpage that breaks down the various provisions of the adult use legalization law that was enacted in April and takes effect on July 1, detailing what people can and can't do legally. At the same time, the state's Joint Legislative Audit and Review Commission is recommending that lawmakers add a misdemeanor penalty to be imposed for possession in excess of the new limit, a proposal opposed by advocates. The notice on the new state site also advises that while regulators can begin developing certain rules for adult use sales starting on July 1, stores cannot open until January 1st, 2024, and it will, quote, take time for the authority to train staff, write regulations, and implement equity and safety initiatives, end quote. Mississippi voters support legalizing marijuana for both medical and recreational use, according to a new poll. In fact, that support is so strong that 20% of voters say that medical cannabis is the single most important issue that will determine how they vote in upcoming elections, outranking all other issues, including job creation, infrastructure, public safety, and education. Mississippians are fired up over medical marijuana after the state Supreme Court invalidated a reform measure that overwhelmingly passed at the ballot last year. Now, 63% of voters say they want the legislature to pass a bill that mirrors the ballot measure, according to the new survey from Millsaps College and Chisholm Strategies. What's more, 52% of respondents said they back ending prohibition altogether and legalizing cannabis for adult use as well. Texas legislators made progress this session on some incremental marijuana policy changes, but activists were hoping for more, and a newly formed progressive coalition that's being led by two former congressional candidates is aiming to take cannabis and other issues directly to voters by putting reform measures on local ballots across the state. Ground Game Texas, a nonprofit spearheaded by former Democratic candidates Julie Oliver and Mike Siegel, isn't exclusively focused on marijuana, but their mantra is workers, wages, and weed, indicating that the group views drug policy reform as a key part of its mission. There is no statewide citizen-led initiative process that would enable advocates to put an issue like decriminalization or legalization on the Texas ballot. But at the local level, there are limited cases where activists can leverage home rule laws that allow for policy changes. A congressional committee plans to vote this week on a bill that would allow researchers to study marijuana products from state legal dispensaries rather than have them rely on a very limited supply of cannabis preparations from what is currently the only federally authorized source. The intent of the provision, which is tucked into a 1,200-plus page transit bill that will go before the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee on Wednesday, is to let scientists conduct impaired driving research using the actual marijuana products that consumers are purchasing. It would also allow the interstate distribution of cannabis to scientists in jurisdictions that have not yet enacted legalization. This is not the main crux of the Invest in America Act, a bill focused on providing funding for highway and transportation products. An earlier version of the measure cleared the House last Congress with identical marijuana provisions, but did not advance in the GOP-controlled Senate. A commission formed between the NFL and the league's players' union plans to award up to $1 million in grants for researchers to investigate the therapeutic potential of marijuana, CBD, and other alternatives to opioids for treating pain. At a press conference on Tuesday, a representative from the NFL Players Association Joint Pain Management Committee said, quote, "Clearly, there are a lot of great ideas in this space, and there's a lot of important research that needs to be funded," end quote. The league specifically wants proposals on three areas of inquiry: the effects of cannabinoids on pain, the effects of non-pharmacologic treatments on pain, and the effects of cannabis or cannabinoids on athletic performance, end quote. Pre-proposal applications are due by July 31st, the NFL notice states. The amount of THC in a person's system after consuming marijuana is not an accurate predictor of impairment, a federally funded study has determined. The research, backed by a grant from the National Institute of Justice, involved 20 people who either ate or vaporized cannabis with varying levels of THC. They were then tested with basic field sobriety and cognitive tests. While the groups that received doses higher than 5 milligrams of THC were all negatively impacted and experienced observable psychomotor impairment, the RTI International researchers found that, quote, "THC levels in biofluids were not reliable indicators of marijuana intoxication for their study participants. Results from the toxicology test showed that the levels of all three targeted cannabis components, THC, CBD, and cannabinol, in blood, urine, and oral fluid, did not correlate with cognitive or psychomotive impairment measures for oral or vaporized cannabis administration," end quote, researchers said. Two-thirds of American voters believe that the war on drugs should end, and they support decriminalizing simple possession of currently illegal substances, according to a new poll from the ACLU and Drug Policy Alliance. The survey comes just ahead of the 50th anniversary of President Richard Nixon declaring the drug war, igniting a system of mass criminalization over behavior that advocates and experts say should instead be treated as public health matters. 65% of those surveyed said they agreed the U.S. should pull out of the war on drugs, and 66% support the more specific policy of, quote, "eliminating criminal penalties for drug possession and reinvesting drug enforcement resources into treatment and addiction services," end quote, a reform referred to by advocates as decriminalization. Curiously, the poll also found that a significantly bigger number of U.S. voters, 83%, feel the drug war has failed. In a letter sent to House leadership on Friday, the Leadership Council on Civil and Human Rights, a coalition that represents more than 220 national organizations, said that it's imperative to promptly pass the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement Act, which cleared the chamber last year and was recently refiled. Since the House approved the legislation last year, quote, "the circumstances of this past year have made the war on drugs even more untenable and amplified the voices of those demanding transformation in our criminal legal system," end quote, the groups wrote. Quote, "In the face of growing national dialogue on discriminatory law enforcement practices, including the disproportionate policing of drug use in communities of color, transforming our criminal legal system and redressing its harms is more relevant and more pressing than ever before," end quote, the letter states. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for the week ending Friday, June 11th, 2021. I'm Russ Belville.
Cannabis Headline News is heard at the top of every hour on Radical Russ Radio, and Friday's news is contained within the free Russ Belville Show live podcast. For daily downloads of Cannabis Headline News podcast to your device every morning, subscribe by becoming a patron of Radical Russ Radio.
We'll dig a little deeper into the Idaho-Wyoming comparison coming up next in the Cannabis Focus, and stay tuned at the end of the show for a rant on legalization versus prohibition. But at this moment, that sound means that it's 4:20 here in the Mountain Time Zone. Time for us to take our union-mandated safety briefing. And remember, when you're in America's last absolute prohibition state, you can't be too safe. Stay tuned.
Almost busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Radical Russ here, reminding you that marijuana legalization doesn't just happen. Smart, dedicated activists have put their freedom and future on the line to make it happen. Like the activists at SSDP, Students for Sensible Drug Policy. SSDP alumni are now leaders in marijuana journalism at Marijuana Moment, Marijuana Government in Massachusetts, and even leading the Drug Policy Alliance. Get involved with the SSDP chapter on your college campus or form one. Everything you need to get started can be found at ssdp.org. And keep it here on Radical Russ Radio for conversations with leaders from this organization, the best marijuana music, and the latest news about cannabis.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
In the Cannabis Headline Newsweek, we reported on how the Libertarian Party in Wyoming is planning to file two initiatives for medical marijuana and for marijuana decriminalization. And I just wanted to dig a little deeper into this because it mirrors a strategy that we are taking here in the nearby state of Idaho. And of course, you probably know that Idaho and Wyoming are two of the few states left that don't have any sort of legalization or real medical marijuana program, although Wyoming does have a CBD oil law that allows for epileptic kids and such to be able to use low THC CBD. The strategy is similar to Idaho's in that we are currently circulating a medical marijuana initiative, the Idaho Medical Marijuana Act, that does also create a medical cannabis program with regulatory structure for production and sales, like what was mentioned by Apollo Pizzell from the cannabis campaign there in Wyoming. The other initiative, which we have just filed, but we're still waiting to receive back from the Secretary of State's office with approval, is the Personal Adult Marijuana Decriminalization Act, which would decriminalize, well, actually legalize in a very limited sense, the use of marijuana. And that's where the Idaho and Wyoming decriminalization potential have some difference. And we'll get into that in a second. But I think it's interesting that Wyoming's taking a similar tack to what we're doing in proposing medical and adult use decriminalization at the same time. And I think it is time to do that. We saw that in the most recent election with South Dakota, where they proposed medical and legalization at the same time, and both passed. It makes sense from an electoral strategy in that if you're going to get voters out for voting for medical, you might as well have them mark the legalization question at the same time. They're both the same, you know, referring to basically the same pool of voters, although there's greater support for medical than there is for recreational. The difference, though, with the Idaho initiative is that we are actually legalizing. What we see here from the report in Marijuana Moment is they would make it so possessing, cultivating, or using marijuana would result in small fines, no jail time. Under the Idaho PAMDA initiative, there would be no fines at all. It would actually be legal and protected to be able to drive across the state line, legally purchase marijuana products in Washington, Oregon, Nevada, or Montana, or for that matter, any state that you could drive to, bring them back to Idaho, and so long as you bring them straight back to your private property and you're not taking it out in public anywhere, that would be legal and protected. You couldn't get fired. You couldn't get kicked out of your schooling. It's basically like a medical marijuana protection, except for people that use marijuana, adults use marijuana, in a responsible way. So that's one way it would differ significantly from what's so far being proposed by the libertarians there in the state of Wyoming. Some other differences, of course, would be the structure of how we get these things on the ballot. In the state of Idaho, we've had to go through this terrible attack from our legislature trying to subvert the initiative process. They didn't like that the people got a Medicaid expansion on the ballot and passed it with over 60%. Before that had got on the ballot and passed, I think they were just kind of resting on their laurels with this feeling that, well, nobody's getting anything on the ballot anyway, so we don't need to do anything about it. Once we got something on the ballot and it passed so overwhelmingly, that kind of shook them up. So they instituted all sorts of new rules, a new rule for a single subject rule in Idaho. An initiative can only cover one subject. A new rule on the signature sheets that says you have to add some verbiage at the top that says people can cross their name out if they want to take their name off of the petition. And then there were the attacks in the legislature trying to change our petitioning standards. The one that stuck is the one that now requires us to collect 6% of signatures from all 35 legislative districts, 6% in each district. The prior rule was 6% from half of those districts, 18 out of 35 districts. I don't think Wyoming has that much of a struggle. In Idaho, we've got to collect 64,946 signatures. In Wyoming, much lower population, they need 41,775 signatures. And they also have a single subject rule in Wyoming. And they have restrictions that they can't have a initiative that dedicates revenues, makes or repeals appropriations. So they've got issues as far as the taxation part and being able to, say that, oh, let's say we're going to tax marijuana at 20% and half of it has to go to the veterans. They can't do something like that in Wyoming. They can't dedicate revenues to certain places. That's left up to the legislature. They also don't seem to have, at least in my research, I haven't seen that they have any sort of, they do have a distribution requirement in theirs. They have to get 15% in two-thirds of the state's 23 counties. Now, this also has an interesting tie back to Idaho. Idaho law used to require, back in the 90s, that you gathered your signatures 6% from 22 out of 44 counties. That was the subject of a lawsuit by one of the petitioning groups. They were petitioning, had something to do with bears. It was a coalition for bears. I mean, like grizzly bears and brown bears, not the gay subculture. Regardless, they sued over this because they said the 22 out of 44 counties makes everyone's vote count for more or less depending on what county they live in. And I'll just throw some numbers at you here. If you got a county that's 100,000 people and you need 6% of that, well, that's 6,000 signatures. If you got a county that's 10,000 people and you need 6% of that, that's 600 signatures. So when you go gather a signature in the one county, it's worth 10 times as much as the signature in the other county, at least with respect to getting to your goal of 6%. And that made the small counties, less populous counties, their votes counted for more. Their signature being like a vote, counted for more. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that this was unconstitutional. It violates the 14th Amendment. 14th Amendment has this equal protection clause. Equal Protection Clause says you have rights, and when you go from state to state, every state has to respect your rights. Your rights don't change as you go from state to state. And the Equal Protection Clause has come to be ruled in number of court cases to say that it's the concept of one person, one vote. Everybody's votes are equal. A vote from someone in Nevada can't be worth more than the vote from someone from California and so forth. One person, one vote. And the county rule in Idaho, 22 out of 44 counties, was ruled to violate one person, one vote. So now we look at Wyoming. And Wyoming says you have to get 15% in two-thirds of the counties. Well, isn't that the same constitutional violation that Idaho just had in the 90s declared unconstitutional? Now, this hasn't been challenged. It still exists, but I have the feeling if it were challenged, it would be invalidated. And were it invalidated, I don't know what Wyoming would go back to, perhaps 15% of just the entire state. So there are some similarities between Idaho and Wyoming in this. Wyoming does allow pays per based on total number of signatures gathered. Don't have to be a Wyoming resident to circulate in Wyoming. Idaho, you do. You have to be an Idaho resident, but you don't have to be a registered voter. So there's many different considerations, but at least the strategy that we're seeing is the same. In Wyoming, they have until February 14th, I believe the date is, to collect the 41 some odd thousand signatures they need. In Idaho, we have until May 1st of 2022 to collect the almost 65,000 signatures. And it'll be interesting to see what they come up with in Wyoming with respect to their decriminalization. Since they're talking about setting it as a fine, it would be still illegal. The Idaho Decriminalization Initiative defines a narrowly tailored set of circumstances that make your use legal, that you bought it from a legal dispensary and you're using it on private property and you're not possessing over 3 ounces. Anything out of that narrow scope, like if they caught you with a joint at the park, that would still be illegal in the state of Idaho. So ours is a weird sort of legalization, but we're calling it a decriminalization. That has a lot to do with just the politics of the whole measure and dealing with a state like Idaho. And I feel that Wyoming may be in the same kind of boat in that, you know, they got a conservative sort of state. They lean more libertarian. And I'm wondering how the medical is going to play with its creation of shops, its creation of grow sites. Same with Idaho. And it might be interesting to see how the medical compares to the decriminalization initiatives in both of these states. I still think medical will poll higher. It'll get better results at the ballot. But it's still a matter of getting these things on the ballot now, isn't it? We got an anti-drug public service announcement coming up from the Church of Scientology. And then we're going to dig deep into this story about jabs for joints, bribing people to get the COVID vaccine by giving them a joint.
Hi, I'm Radical Russ Belville, the sole producer of this 24-hour marijuana music and cannabis conversation stream I call Radical Russ Radio. As part of my mission to educate and entertain people about the need to end adult marijuana prohibition, I produce the Russ Belville Show podcast every week, available absolutely free wherever you get your podcasts. For those of you who'd like to help support my mission financially, you can become a Radical Russ Radio VIP at patreon.com/radicalruss or by clicking the link for Toker Talk Radio in the main menu. For just $4.20 a month, VIPs will receive the exclusive download of Hour 2 of my podcast, Toker Talk Radio, every week, as well as the 5-minute cannabis headline news every weekday. Upgrade to the $14.20 a month tier, and you'll get those podcasts and a set of custom patriotic pro-marijuana stickers from me every quarter.
And if you can afford to support Radical Russ Radio at $44.20 a month, you get my podcast, and each quarter you receive a poster, then a mug, then a t-shirt, and finally a hoodie that proclaim your support for ending adult marijuana prohibition. I literally cannot do this without you. Your support enables me to continue my life's work, and I thank you for it. Visit patreon.com/radicalrus and become a Radical Russ Radio VIP today.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
If the price of the pot matters, you're smoking too much pot.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
They said if I got drunk, I'd be one of the guys. They said if I got drunk, I'd be one of the guys. They lied. Find out the truth about drugs. Drugfreeworld.org.
This has been the Russ Belville Show's anti-drug public service announcement of the day, exclusively on RadicalRuss.com.
Some of the bed music sometimes. I don't know what to make of it. Welcome back, everyone. 36 and a half after the hour here. It's a beautiful day in eastern Oregon and western Idaho. Sun's out and the wind is blowing, threatening to blow down the greenhouse. We got some precious, precious plants in there. We can't have no greenhouse going down on us. I'm Radical Russ. Glad to have you here. Want to talk a little bit more about the Pacific Northwest and most specifically the story that went out over the Associated Press. And I saw it repeated everywhere. It was in the Idaho Statesman, as a matter of fact. Lots of different outlets. I'm reading to you from the Fox News version, but I think it's all the same text. The headline that garnered so much attention was Washington's Joints for Jabs COVID-19 vaccine program falling flat. So, yeah, trying to paint this as, oh, see the stoners, I'm the marijuana thing. It didn't live up to the hype, you know. We're kind of in that period now where the media has kind of grown stale toward the wonder of marijuana. It's legal now. They're selling it. And now it's into the, oh, what's going wrong with it? How is it not turning out like we expected? So they made a big deal about this. The copy reads, it was designed as an innovative way to promote COVID-19 vaccinations. But Washington's new Joints for Jabs program is off to a rough start. Officials announced Monday that the state's nearly 500 licensed marijuana retailers could begin hosting vaccine clinics and offering a single free pre-rolled marijuana cigarette to any 21-plus adult who received a shot there. And as the story goes on, you know, they're talking about how it's not really picking up, like, you know, the other things that they've done. They've offered, you know, other places are offering pints of beer, sports tickets, prize money, you know, lotteries, all these different gimmicks to get people to take the COVID-19 vaccine. And so the story, if you don't dig into it very much, or you just saw the headline, makes it seem as if, you know, all the stoners are lazy or they don't want to get vaccinated or whatever. But if you dig into it, what you find out is it's because, once again, we don't actually treat marijuana like alcohol. In the case of the retailers that were selling alcohol, you didn't have to set up a clinic at the bar. All you had to do is show proof of vaccination. And remember, in Washington State, they're run by the same state regulatory agency. It's the Liquor and Cannabis Board. So the Liquor and Cannabis Board allowed breweries, wineries, and bars to offer a free drink to customers to just show proof of vaccination. Here's my card. And we know how many people are faking those things too. They didn't have to set up a clinic. So the marijuana retailers, they have to set up a clinic. Now, what was the excuse for that? Well, they say, well, in Washington State, we don't have on-site consumption of marijuana, right? In the case of the breweries or the wineries, people are getting their drink and then, you know, showing their card and getting their drink. But in the case of the marijuana, they're not using the marijuana there. So what's to stop someone from showing their vaccine card, getting their free joint, going to another place, showing their vaccine card, getting a free joint, and, you know, hop to store after store and get all these free joints and then sell them to the children? Yes, folks, they actually used it.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
Yes, won't we think of the children, right? So let me get this, let's get this straight, right? We trust the people to show up at the bar with a card that says they got a vaccine, and then they get a free drink. And we're supposed to expect that those people don't then go to the next bar, show their card, get a free drink, then go to the next bar, get a free drink, and driving around this whole time. That's not happening. But the marijuana, we're worried they're going to go to each store and get a free joint, but they're not smoking the joints, so they're driving sober from place to place on the theory that somehow they're going to sell it to the kids. This is just so maddening. It's what we always go through with marijuana being treated like it's plutonium, like it's, you know, a radioactive material we've got to keep out of everyone's sight and behind lead curtains or something like that. So a spokesman for the Washington Cannabis Business Association is named Aaron Pickus. He said, quote, "We're hearing from retailers that they want to be a part of this. Why can't we do this like the wineries and the breweries did it?" And again, they came back and they said the requirement that the pot shops hold on-site vaccination clinics was partly motivated by the fact that people aren't allowed to consume cannabis at licensed retailers, unlike alcohol at a brewery or a winery, he said. He being the chairman of the Liquor and Cannabis Board, David Postman, suggesting that people who showed their vaccine cards at multiple pot shops could wind up with a lot of free joints that might be given to youngsters. Yeah, all right. He also said that the board gave the marijuana stores an advantage it didn't give to the alcohol purveyors, a tax break on the product they give away. Postman said, quote, "I guess I just beg for a little understanding. If it's not the right thing, then that'll be too bad because I think we all need to get as many people vaccinated as possible." Daniela Bernhard, a co-owner of Uncle Ike's cannabis store in Seattle, told the board the industry is excited to be included in the efforts to boost vaccination, but, quote, "disappointed that our legal and heavily regulated sector continues to be treated differently than our peer sectors in Washington. If we are trusting adults driving with their vaccination cards to get a pint of beer and then responsibly get to their next destination, we can also trust that adults will pick up a joint and then enjoy it again later in a legal setting." Yes. Thank you. It's legal. And so here's the thing, too, is we just saw Nevada, and we're going to talk about this in the second hour. We just saw the governor of Nevada sign legalization of pot lounges. And if Washington State had pot lounges, then they could be treated like alcohol. You could say you get a joint that you have to smoke here for your jab. But you know what they'd say then? Then they'd say, oh, now these people are all stoned and we can't let them leave. It also brings up a tweet battle that I had to have with the Citizens Against Legalizing Marijuana, who I like to troll on the internet, who they mocked the Joints for Jabs program by saying, oh, here we have a deadly respiratory infection and we're going to encourage people to smoke marijuana that could hook them for life. Like, geez. Okay. So first we have to assume that there's somebody who's unvaccinated, who's never smoked pot before, and they both want to get vaccinated and smoke pot for the first time ever in their life. And that one puff then hooks them for life and devastates their life. Okay. Look, let's be clear about this. Smoking pot is not harmless. I say again, smoking pot, not harmless. It will affect your lungs. I have a bit of a cough. I have a little phlegm that I get from time to time. It's not COVID. It's certainly not COVID. And that's what's frustrating with dealing with these marijuana prohibitionists is anytime you want to try to admit that there is some harm, they want to blow it all crazy out of proportion. So if the person who's going to get their vaccine smokes one joint, they're not going to be developing lifelong bronchitis. Like, I've worked really hard to get to this point, like 30 years of marijuana smoking. And still, I have all the breath tests you give the doctor, you know, the lung capacity, the volume, how long can you hold your breath? I still do fine on those. My lungs are fine. I have a little bit of a cough sometimes. That's it. But to suggest that you should forego the COVID vaccine, look, if it gets people vaccinated, I'm for it. I do agree a little with the sentiment of people saying, really? We've got to bribe you? we got to have a lottery. We got to have bribes. We got to have tickets. We got to have free beers and joints to get you to help protect the species. It is kind of a sad commentary on our attack on science and expertise. And but still, hey, if that's the world we live in, I'm all for giving people joints if that's what it takes to be able to get some people vaccinated. Now just give us some pot lounges. You won't have to go through all this hassle. We're going to take a break and wind things up for this first hour. Coming up, the radical rant. I'm going in toe-to-toe with Calm this time, because you can't blame legalization when prohibition still exists.
The Coffee Pod in Sumter, Oregon is your fast, friendly marijuana shop nestled in the beautiful Elkhorn Mountain Range outside of Baker City. We're serving Eastern Oregon and Idaho's Treasure Valley with the selection of flower, pre-rolls, vapes, dab, and edibles you need at the prices that make it well worth the drive. Don't venture to some well-watched parking lot in some border town dispensary just to take a number and wait in a long line for your cannabis products. Make the drive to the Coffee Pot in Sumter and deal one-on-one with your bud tender with no waiting. See, feel, and smell the products you're after and make your purchase knowing your tax dollars are helping a small tourist community that needs it. Plus, every dollar you spend is a point toward our Bong Bucks program that earns you coupons on glass and accessories. The Coffee Pot also honors our military, seniors, teachers, and first responders with a 10% discount. And as always, OMMP patients pay no 20% tax. Come on up to the Coffee Pot in Sumter, the first business on the left, on the side of the two-story log cabin restaurant, and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Okay, well, maybe you're high, too.
And now, Puff Pass Ponder with Radical Russ. If an employer has to test your urine to determine if you're using drugs at work, doesn't that suggest that they would never have known about it otherwise? This has been Puff Pass Ponder with Radical Russ.
Must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
As you know, I consider myself the king of the trolls when it comes to battling the prohibitionists online, particularly on Twitter, and one of the... Well, I don't know if they're the same. They're allied. There's Calm and Alm. Calm is the citizens against legalizing marijuana, and Alm is the Americans against legalizing marijuana. I think they should merge and just be the American citizens against legalizing marijuana. Then they'd be a calm before the storm. I don't know. But anyway, Alm tweeted the other day, "We thought it was legal to buy pot in Oregon, and that was supposed to stop pot-related drug crimes." And within that, they are tweeting a news story coming out of the Oregonian, Portland newspaper. Two Portland brothers, two marijuana buyers, die in gun battle during attempted, during arranged drug deal gone bad Sunday night. So I went back and forth with these guys and, you know, had to ask them, like, really, should we look up how many marijuana charges there were before legalization and compare them to after legalization? So I guarantee you that there are far fewer crimes going on with respect to marijuana because most of them aren't crimes anymore. Or would it be better to point out that as long as something that costs $12.50 an ounce to grow sells for $200 an ounce, there's going to be some violent black marketeers undercutting that? See, here's the problem. You can't blame legalization while prohibition still exists. And for much of the country, prohibition still exists. As you get into this story, if you actually dig below the headlines, Citizens Against Legalizing Marijuana, the very lead paragraph reads, "Three men flew in from Texas after arranging a marijuana deal, showed up at a Southeast Portland house Sunday night and got into a gunfight over the tubs of pot inside, killing two brothers." From Texas. Let's see, Texas. Yes, that's still a crime. Marijuana is still illegal in Texas. So it makes sense economically, if you have high tolerance for risk, to go from Texas to Oregon and get big old tubs. And I've seen, you know, the Walmart tubs, Walmart tubs, plastic tubs of weed, and bring it back to Texas where you can sell it for a large profit. $300-$400 an ounce, what you can get in Portland for $800 to $1,000 a pound. It's prohibition that continues to fuel the black market. It's overregulation that continues to fuel the black market. So you have a prohibition state, of course, prohibition being the absence of any regulations, allowing the black market and those forces to determine what those things are going to cost. And the scarcity of it and the risk of it leads to higher profits. And even within states that have legalization, the tax rate on marijuana, the ridiculous packaging requirements, the insane amount of security and overhead that's required are always going to create a margin in which the black market can thrive. Now, in the gunfight in Portland, Mitchell Nacosti, age 31, lived at the house. His brother, Kendall Gregg, 27, and two other men were killed in a burst of gunfire that erupted Sunday night in Portland. And one of the wounded men called 911 from the home to report the shooting, but he died at the scene. One of the guys from Texas got away. A terrible story. Again, a terrible story that rocked this neighborhood, shocked the people in it, but a story that is not the fault of marijuana legalization. And for these prohibitionists to say, oh, we thought legalization was supposed to get rid of the violence, it will if you let it fully happen. Do you see many gunfights in the streets over Dos Equis or Corona or Budweiser or Coors? You don't. Why? Beer is legal everywhere. It's ubiquitous. If you want beer, you can get beer very cheaply, as much of it as you can afford. That's why there's no gang wars over beer. That's why there's no turf battles over beer. Everybody who wants it can get it. Everybody can afford it. Even if you have to buy the, you know, old English, you know, malt liquor, you can afford this stuff. You can get alcohol. Now, we can make a case that perhaps that's bad. There's a lot of drunk driving. There's domestic abuse. There's all sorts of loss of productivity and terrible health effects from this easy, cheap access to alcohol. Once we actually thought maybe that was a bad idea, and we did like what we do with marijuana, we prohibited it. We said, no, we shouldn't allow the sale and manufacture of alcohol. We should make that criminal and ban it. And for the next 13 years, we dealt with Al Capone and gangsters and gunfights in the streets, all the things that marijuana prohibition and other drug prohibition have led to. But at least back then, we came to our senses and recognized, hey, maybe the alcohol wasn't so bad. Now, there were some other factors. There's a whole factor of not having income tax that weighed into people's thoughts that maybe taxing alcohol would be the way out of economic problems. But we learned our lesson. We learned that the prohibition makes it worse. Now, with marijuana prohibition, we're dealing with a substance that's far safer than alcohol. People don't get belligerent and violent on it. People don't get a lot of health problems. In fact, for many people, it helps to aid their health problems. It helps to reduce their overall healthcare costs. My father being a prime example, no longer on diabetes medicine, on 1/6 of the opioid painkillers he used to be on. But so long as you still go to jail in Texas or Tennessee, so long as you can still get busted in any of the Kansas or Nebraska or any state, there is going to be that black market. Now, my opponents have also noted that when it comes to marijuana, its use has increased since legalization. And that's absolutely true. Yep, it is true. We went from about 16 million monthly tokers now to almost 30 million. And that's been since about 2008, 2009. Now, it has increased among the Utes, as they might say in My Cousin Vinny. The Utes haven't increased their smoking any. But people aged 18 to 34, oh yeah. Yeah, the smoking pot has gone up. In fact, the demographic that the pot smoking has gone up the most amongst is people 65 and older. Now, they were a small demographic to start with, but they've over eightfold increased their marijuana smoking. And our opponents, for them, that's just negative. That's a bad thing. Smoking marijuana is bad, so if there's more of it, then there's more bad. I don't look at marijuana smoking that way. I look at it as a neutral thing. You smoke pot, and then what happens after that is on you. And what we've seen is it doesn't have the negative effects to the degree that we see in alcohol. Far, far less. Now, I'm not one to dismiss that some people have a problem with marijuana. Some people depend on it too much. Some people it might not enhance their life the way it enhances mine. But in no way does that mean that we should be locking them up or arresting them or creating this situation that leads guys from Texas to fly to Portland to shoot up 4 people over tubs of vegetable matter. That's insane. And I will go to my grave telling prohibitionists this, that if they really cared about people, if they really wanted to eliminate the crime, you would make marijuana as legal as tea. It would be as cheap as tea. Like growing tea, growing marijuana, leafy crops, right? What's a tea bag cost? Like less than a nickel? Marijuana grown with no restrictions, at scale, with the free market allowed to dictate, the price of marijuana should be $100 a pound. $100 a pound, not $100 an ounce. And counterintuitively to the way prohibitionists think, more marijuana freedom would cause less marijuana harm. We'll talk more coming up hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. Got that quote from Louis Gohmert of Texas. Oh my God. And David Simon. going off on the drug war. A lot of wisdom there. Plus, you'll get to learn what a Zoot Suit Riot is. It's not a good thing. For everyone here in America's last absolute prohibition state, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Till next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You're planets, you're growing, you're giants, you're